The following was originally broadcast on Northumberland 89.7 FM. For more podcasts and learn more about us, go to northumberland897.ca. And thank you for downloading this podcast.
Welcome to our program, Aging, a New Reality, a show that provides insight into many of the concerns that seniors have during their journey in later years. We talk to experts who will share their knowledge on subjects such as finances, nutrition, housing, and health.
We're back again with Dr. Wendy Wolfman from Sinai Health, the chair of Mature Women's Health. And we were discussing some of the issues and problems that occur with women as they age and some of the possible interventions that could be used. Welcome back, Dr. Wolfman. And now I would really like to move into the issue of ageism and how you think, and if you think, ageism affects funding for the research that you think is needed now and in the future for women's health.
I absolutely think there's ageism. Any woman who goes to a cosmetic counter, and I myself have done this, I'm completely ignored. I don't exist, right? I've got the money to purchase the cosmetics, but if there are young, pretty women there, or even not pretty, I guess, it's as if I'm not even there. I think society ignores aging people, and I think that's really a tragedy because we have so much to contribute.
Yes.
We have so much knowledge that we've acquired via living.
Yes. And they ignore aging women more than they ignore aging men. I'll tell you that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And there is this whole history of the aging woman being a witch.
Yes.
Or the villain.
Yes.
In the movies, or the person in your neighborhood that is scary.
Yes. And also asexual, I might add, you know,
I'd really like to add to that, because we know that decreased sexual desire is a validated menopausal symptom that starts 2 years before the last menstrual period. And for instance, in the US, about 12 years ago, there was a medication, a testosterone patch, that was tested in 10 good prospective randomized controlled trials. The medication was presented to the FDA, and it was close in time after the Women's Health Initiative, so any hormones were not well accepted. And in spite of the fact that this was efficacious, and it improved the number of satisfying sexual events by 1 to 2 a month, the comments were, well, what's 1 to 2 a month?
Oh.
and when people are having zero, that's important.
That's, yes.
And also, in spite of the fact that they had 2 year safety data, the FDA said, go back and do 4 years of safety data. And so the company that had invested millions of dollars in doing the trial said, forget it. So then another company took it up and used a gel, which was safe for 4 years. But unfortunately, there was no difference between the people who used the gel and those who did not. But then the control group had an extremely positive response, which was abnormal for the control group. So then that company threw it out. So there are 33 testosterones approved in the US for men and 0 for women.
Oh my goodness. And yet we have testosterone in our systems, yes?
Oh, we have more testosterone than we have estrogen. Testosterone is a normal female hormone. And that's there. Susan Davis from Australia, I had gone and worked with her for a while. She's like the world expert. And in 2019, the International Menopause Society and 12 other medical societies issued a statement saying that the use of transdermal testosterone for decreased sexual desire should be considered for postmenopausal women because it's safe and effective, but obviously has to be controlled because we have to make sure it's given in the proper amounts. But there's no approved therapy in any country in the world except for Perth, Australia. Huh. And so is that sexism or ageism? I don't know. But do menopausal women not deserve to be sexual?
I exactly.
Viagra was approved in a few months, right?
Yeah.
And so that speaks to me that there is both sexism and ageism for women, especially for aging women.
Well, what is the point of giving a spouse, a man in a relationship, just Viagra, if their spouse, if their wife is older and can't enjoy sex?
It's actually cruel.
Yeah. What is gained by that?
Someone who's been 10 years with no hormone and has shrinkage of her vulva tissues.
Yes.
And you put in a large tumescent penis, that's going to really be painful. The woman actually may have tears or injury. And then if she develops pain, she's not going to want to have sex again.
That's so true.
This is a couple's problem.
Yes.
It's not just a woman's problem. And many men have their sexual function affected if their partner has pain.
Yes.
So it's a really important problem and it's not talked about enough. And it affects families, relationships,
yes,
quality of life, intimacy.
Yes.
Many different aspects.
All those pieces of living that give us joy. The intimacy, the closeness, the sharing, the caring, if that disappears, it becomes a pretty narrow life to live. And, if we can help in some way by using something such as a testosterone patch or anything that and the estrogen creams, et cetera, then it seems to me to be a good solution. Are there any other new interventions? I was reading, as you suggested, that FemTech group that's developing technology tools that we can use that affect our vaginal area.
I'm actually not that knowledgeable in that area. I would say my area of expertise is really more in hormone therapies and other alternatives for treatment of symptoms. I'm also very concerned about the diseases of aging that occur silently that women are unaware of. And I think cardiovascular disease is a major killer of women. And there are many things that we talk about when women come around menopause to try and optimize quality of life. We talk about the 7 healthy heart things that people should do.
Oh, tell me what those are.
Yeah, I hope I remember all 7.
Okay, well, as many as you can remember.
Yeah, so optimization of weight, optimization of blood pressure, making sure your blood sugar is okay, making sure your lipids are okay, like your cholesterol, triglycerides, Mediterranean diet, not smoking, exercising regularly. I think that's 7.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Good for you.
Yeah, so I feel like a broken record, but I talk to everybody about this because if you do all those things, then that is usually associated with a healthy heart. There is also some data about the use of hormone therapy around menopause, that there is a window of opportunity at the time of menopause where estrogens are beneficial for the cardiovascular system. For instance, in the Women's Health Initiative, which was the big study that scared everybody.
Yes.
If you analyze the group between the ages of 50 to 59, there was really nothing that was risky. The benefits outweighed the risks. And for cardiovascular benefit, it was neutral or beneficial. There was benefits on bone, benefits on hot flashes, quality of life. And we now have 20 years after the WHI, and women who took estrogen alone, who'd had a hysterectomy, for instance, and used the medication that was prescribed, which was horse urine estrogen, which we don't always prescribe now, but that was a specific medication, they actually had 20% fewer breast cancers, which has never been publicized. The women who took the horse urine estrogen and a certain progestin still had a very slight increased risk of breast cancer after 20 years when they took that hormone therapy for 5 years around menopause. But basically, I think the attitude towards hormone therapy has changed. And I think for young symptomatic women, it's felt in the medical community that this is the best option that we have and that it's safe. One of the questions that has not really been answered is we know that starting hormone therapy for women in their 70s is not a good idea because there's a window of opportunity when the vessels are healthy where estrogen is beneficial. But if you wait too long, it's almost like you have a computer program that goes one way and you can't get back to the beginning. So if you wait too long and start hormones too long after, then it actually may be detrimental. But what we don't really know is if you start hormones and keep taking them, exactly how much risk there is to doing that.
Yeah.
I think that there is more flexibility in the prescription for older women now than there was before, because certainly women have the right to make the decision for a medication that has a small amount of risk.
Yes, agreed.
We make that decision for lots of other therapies. And so we should have the right, if our quality of life is better, to make the decision about hormones as well.
You were referring to the hormone pill, right? Not the estrogen therapies that are local. That
no, I'm not talking about local. I'm talking about so-called systemic therapies.
Yeah.
Where you do get elevations of blood levels. And we have different therapies. We have pills. We have gels. We have patches. We have body identical approved Health Canada therapies. We have a new therapy which has been available in Britain for a long time, which is a synthetic molecule that in the body activates the estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone receptors. We had an older medication, which currently you can't get, but it will be available next year, which is an estrogen with an anti-estrogen. And that's a very interesting combination, which was very effective and we think maybe, we don't know for sure, but had less effect on the breast.
So these are therapies that can be used that are specific to heart, or is it also useful for bone thinning and things like that?
Right. So right now, the primary reason and the Health Canada approved reason is for alleviation of symptoms. So hot flashes and general urinary syndrome of menopause. In Canada, we don't have approval for bone, but many medications in the US, hormone therapies, do have bone approval. And the only reason that we don't is it's related to the pharmaceutical company making application, which is much larger for the bone information. For instance, I just heard a study looking at oral estrogen and progesterone in one pill, which is available in the US. It's approved in Canada, but not marketed yet, showing the beneficial effects on bone markers for that medication. So we definitely know that hormone therapy is beneficial for bone. As women get older, though, oral therapies, there is a very slight increased risk of clots in the legs and clots in the lungs. There's more risk of stroke. And so we try and decrease the dose to reduce those issues or we switch to a transdermal therapy, which bypasses the liver, and therefore we don't get the same increase in clotting factors. And
transdermal means on, you have a patch on your skin.
A patch or a gel. And the technology is unbelievable. It's a clear patch. It's teeny tiny. You wouldn't believe it. And it's not a big dose of estrogen. It's a very small dose. It's nothing like a birth control pill. It's four to five times less the amount of estrogen. And all we're doing, we're giving women back even less estrogen than what they produced in the first half of their menstrual cycle. So the medications are usually extremely well tolerated with very few side effects. So it's a different generation of medications, a different dosages of medications, but we still have so many things that we need to answer, so much research. What's the perfect dosage? How much do you need? How much do you need for cardiac benefit? And that, by the way, that's controversial, although there's more and more recent evidence showing the importance of estrogen on the cardiovascular system, but it's still not approved for cardiac reasons. And that's another long story why. Okay.
Yeah. Do you consider genetic makeup as well? So you take a family history, if there's a big history of heart disease or cancer in a family?
So each therapy is individualized. Mm. And you individualize it according to the patient's symptoms, her risk factor, what problem she has currently, her family history. Although a history of breast cancer in a first degree relative is not a contraindication. It is not. We're looking more into genetic causes and making sure that that person doesn't have genetic risk for breast cancer or colon cancer or uterine cancer. There are many cancers we know now in families that we search for around menopause. And unfortunately, also drug plans, because, for instance, the ODB does not cover transdermal therapies.
Doesn't.
Yeah. So tell me why. I don't know why. And if you send in a special requisition, the government will refuse it. I have patients who can't ingest pills, who have had surgeries on their GI tract, and it won't be approved. So the government, as far as I'm concerned, is behind in terms of their attitudes towards hormone therapy. They're stuck at 2002 after the Women's Health Initiative and the erroneous publications after that.
Is that just here in Canada, or is that prevalent throughout the world?
I don't know what each individual country has in terms of coverage. And every province is different. So there are some things covered in other provinces. We were actually going to look at this, about what was covered and actually how much each medication cost. Because this is very tricky for people as they get older.
Yes, very.
What they can afford.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because it gets expensive.
My last question, and I think this is important, is there any best places that we can refer women, whether it's online or it's a blog, or whether it's a podcast, or whether it's some place where we can find out more about mature women's health?
So as I mentioned, there are YouTube videos from the International Menopause Society. And I think those are wonderful. And I think there's a Canadian Menopause Society, CMS, and there is www.menopause.org, which is the North American Menopause Society. And they have also some wonderful educational pamphlets. Also through the Society of Obstetricians and Gynecologists of Canada, there is something called Menopause and You, U. And there is some excellent educational materials I would caution people about a lot of the information on the internet. It's sensational.
Yes.
And there is a lot of information which is not scientifically correct.
Yes.
And one thing that I've tried to do in my unit is, and I hope I've been able to do that, is to provide the best recent up-to-date menopausal medicine based on the information that we have. And I've tried to stay away from a lot of the non-scientific groups that don't have good scientific information. Not to say that maybe some of their products aren't efficacious, but if they haven't done prospective randomized controlled trials, I can't feel confident that what they're recommending is a good idea.
Well, you know, that's pretty general too, that many of the things you see on social media are not validated in any way, and you need to kind of make sure the sources of your information are valid and like you say, trialed.
And I think people can waste a lot of money. I've seen patients come to see me who come with their shopping bags of stuff that they've tried.
Yeah.
Also, buyer beware. I had a woman, I spent a number of years in the US working in my early career. I had a woman who came with a product. She said, oh, this was wonderful. It worked for me. I bought it at the health food store. And I said, would you bring it so I can see what it is? So she brought it. And within the product was pig ovary.
Oh, God.
Which means that she was getting a lot of estrogen via pigs. So I'm sure it did work very well.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. That's a scary story. That just buyer beware, as you say, buyer beware for sure. For sure. Thank you so much, Dr. Wolfman. You have been so generous with your time. And I know that your time is so, so important to your patients. And I just wanted to make sure that other people besides me had the benefit of your experience and your wisdom and your knowledge. So thank you so much for this interview. I so much appreciate it.
Oh, that's okay. Thank you very much for interviewing me.
Thank you.
Interviews in this series are conducted by Madeline Corelli, technical assistance by Trevor Joyce, production by Kevin Stewart, Olivia Waldroff, and Paige Johnston. Executive producer is Barry Walker. The preceding program has been a co-production of Northumberland 89.7 FM and the Community Training and Development Centre.